we welcome into the program author Colin Fleming. Check out a number of his great works. Sam Cooke, Live at the Harlem Square Club, 1963. His collections, Dark March, Buried on the Beaches. Colin, welcome in.
Hey, what's up, Kimball?
Well, we've actually raided the bag of Halloween treats here at the station, so a little sugar high going right now.
You're a gluttonous guy.
I am that. And usually I stand pretty healthy. I'm following your lead, but you got to break free once in a while and live out there on the edge.
What did you just snack on?
I had a Kit Kat. I had a little mini Kit Kat.
Oh, the two bar,
yeah,
not the four. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not satisfying, is it?
No.
The full range. Is it four or is it five? But you want it, you know how they have fingers of whiskey. I look at Kit Kats that way, right? Because they're these chocolate fingers. So you want to go five fingers. I don't want to say like Kit Kat fisted, but you want the whole hand.
I read too, and isn't it the way we're going in America that they're making all of the Halloween candy slightly smaller? Everything is getting a little bit smaller because that's how the companies increase their profit margin now.
Oh, I thought you were going to say so people could be healthier.
No, God, no, they don't.
Because I was going to say, they'll just eat more of the smaller ones.
Well, yeah, well, exactly, right? I didn't get enough of them malted milk balls. Give me two more bags. Yeah, there you go.
I saw where there's going to be, or it's in development, a pill to lose weight, magical pill. And then you're going to get all these people jumping off of bridges because they're not going to have the exercise. And they're not going to get the mental benefit. So they're going to be thinner, but more mentally disastrous. And so nothing ever depressingly surprises
right.
me. I'm not, there it is.
I'm thin. Why aren't I happy? I thought that was going to be the key.
Tom Brady's not happy.
No.
So he's a thin guy. He's a good looking guy. And the new Jay Gatsby. So it's more than that, people. Get out there and run some stairs.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Well, much to get to this week, including, wow, what a unbelievably great performance in what I sounds like was the first episode of the Mercury Theater on the Air. Orson Welles, 23-year-old Orson Welles, doing Dracula.
You never know how old Welles is. You have to know when he was born and do the math based upon anything he's in, right? Because there's no telltale indication in his performances, whether he's old. In Touch of Evil, he's not actually as old as the villainous cop is. And when he was younger, he was older than he seemed. So you never know. And this is from July of 1938. So on the timeline, we have the War of the Worlds the night before Halloween and all of that to do. This is actually a few months earlier. And I think it's one of the most horrifying, truly frightening radio broadcasts. I think this is something that cements for me, or it would have if I was alive at the time, early on, that Welles could make radio art. And what has always struck me the most about this particular piece is that it has a physicality to it that radio shouldn't seem to be able to possess. You feel as you listen as if you are being pawed, tugged, licked, touched, bit. It's a strange sensation to get from a radio program.
And everything about it, the production value, music, sound effects, the acting, everything fits together so perfectly. It's for my money, it's as good an example of what made radio drama great that you could find out there.
It was. Of course, you'd have to be this guy. You'd have to have this. It played to a Wellesian strength. He could take literature, dense literature, or if you don't want to credit Stoker's novel or term it as dense, it was lengthy and it was a collage. I've always looked at it as a work of modernism. It's from 1897. We don't think about modernism until circa 1920, but there was a lot being pieced together, composite style, in Dracula. So Wells was able to whittle it down to essentials without losing that experimental aspect. And he could take, look at Chimes at Midnight. It's this hodgepodge of all these different Shakespearean plays. It's not one text. And he was able to graph this, vivisect this, and make it all work together. So this was really his element. It was his comfort zone. It was something where his prodigious stores of energy were put to productive use. And you can hear the terrifying results. It's scarier as a work of radio than The War of the Worlds. War of the Worlds is all of these other things, but for simply a fear factor, Dracula is a willy inducer.
And as great as his best film work was, I don't know that any of it is any better than the work he did on radio at the peak of his talents.
The problem with Wells is that once you get past Citizen Kane, a lot of people I've learned over the years have issues with his films. Sometimes that's because he wasn't able to see them through the final state that he wished. Other times it was because he was doing other things and he was okay with there being elements of failure in his films. He was trying to do things technically that were complicated. He was always more interested in the experiment, the undertaking, than the result. Now I can watch his films and I can love all of them, but I can also understand why some people will point at The Stranger, for instance. It's a lesser achievement as a filmic work of art, but have you noticed that oftentimes people who are of a certain age know Orson Welles, boomers, they'll say The Strangers is their favorite film by him. Mm. I encounter that all the time. So he was at his apex creatively in many different fields, but radio was the first one where that was established, and he had everything that you needed for that medium, the command of language, the command of voice, the command of timing, everything that Welles possessed in spades went into the radio when he was focused.
It is a dazzling work of art. You could do yourself no bigger favor than give a listen to Orson Welles and Dracula as we get ready for Halloween. You might also want to listen to what I listened to and what you shared with me, which might be the strangest bit of radio drama I've ever heard, from a show called Darkness, an episode entitled Weekend Vacation.
This is one of the weirdest anythings we've ever discussed. I think that's
oh yes,
on its own. I listened to it again last night. I've heard it a bunch. Obviously, whenever I first heard it, it stuck with me. And I'm not trying to be self-referential. If anyone out there goes and hears this, it will stick with you too. We don't know a lot about this show. We know next to nothing about this show. There are only 8 surviving episodes. I want to say that it's from the late 60s, going by some of the language. They talk about vibes, but not in some Pet Crystal 1970s sort of way. So I feel like we're before the Three's Company era, but we've gone through the psychedelic times. And it's this out of step, anyway, with whatever time period it's from, where this family, father and their teen daughter, they're leaving a motel and they are these weekend, it's not just once, it seems every weekend, the language is weird, every weekend they have a vacation,
right.
It's like, what is that about? Who does that? And the language is just off right away. The guy seems so wooden the way he talks that when you listen to it the first time, if you listen to it again, you wouldn't go in like and hear it this way. But when you listen to the first time, you think, this is amateur hour. What a joke. They couldn't get someone better than this schlub, but they're setting you up for something. And the daughter's talking, I had this boy lined up. I had these boys. She's talking about them as if they're crops that she's harvesting. She's grown them, and now it's... So you're thinking, what? And the parents are all okay with this. Do they want her to just hook up? We don't know what it is. There's a road that's washed out. They end up at this other place. Things get even stranger because there's this witch of a type woman who's the proprietress of this roadside inn in Monroe.
Monroe.
He's He's quite. Who's that guy in Goonies who wants the rocky road? He's a bit like that.
Yes.
That guy.
Yes.
And he is. He's into this girl. He says, "Me like girly." And you're thinking, "Oh no!" Throughout the program, you're thinking, "Oh no! This is wrong. This is horrible." Then the parents count on their daughter to. It seems like she's going to seduce Monroe. And then, Kimball, all hell breaks loose in some of the most terrifying sound you will.
Oh,
so messed up.
Oh yes. Yeah. And I mean, we say sometimes I didn't see it coming. This was so far out of left field. I had no idea. I was blindsided by this. And I was listening to it on my iPad. And I sat there staring at my iPad, not believing my ears.
It'll mess you up. And it's not even accurate to say it's a twist. This is so far beyond a twist. Mm. A twist is a gimmick and a tweak and a wink and a nudge. This is not that. And the guy at the beginning who's, "Yes, dear, I think we should go to another place." Would this guy become, it's like opening the mouth of hell. This is the sound that would come out if the Maw could talk. The guy's voice, whatever the hell they do, and what happens, let's not even say what happened.
No.
Because these people should go listen to it, and you'll be messed up. I really felt like last night I was doing a solid by even listening to this again, because I didn't want to. And then at the end, I was hopeful that maybe you imagine that. Maybe that didn't happen last time quite the way you think it did. And then I just re-traumatized myself. Truly messed up.
And yet I really want to listen to it again on Halloween night.
It is just so, you know what? It's almost as if it's an episode of Suspense, but less wacky at the end. You could see it being the most bizarrely frightening episode of The Twilight Zone if they had done it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And but there's just so much hell. Hellfire and bloodletting in this dude's voice at the end. And, it's like being beaten up by your radio. You just don't see it coming.
Darkness, Weekend Vacation. Check it out. From there to one of the classic horror films of all time. And we've talked about it before. I think more than a horror film. 1941's The Wolfman.
The Wolfman is the universal horror film of the 1940s, one of the classics. I mean, what are the classics? They're Dracula, going back to the 30s, Dracula and Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, the Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon. Those are your core monsters, your pop culture invasion monsters. Everyone knows these archetypes. And when we know those archetypes in this country, I don't mean that we live in somewhere in the hinterlands of Europe, and we know these archetypes through folklore and literature we grew up reading as kids and all that stuff. We know these monsters here because of these films. And so this is a film that is heavy on a meta form of lore, even within the film itself as it's unfurling. And a lot of that is going to come from Maleva, the creepy gypsy woman, who will not stop, and she does it in other films subsequently, who will not stop going on about these things she knows that are definitely true. And something else that I do like about this film, and I'm sure it's not what he wanted for his career at this juncture, 10 years on from Dracula, Bela Lugosi has one of his finest roles. And Bela Lugosi was an effective character actor, because a little Bela Lugosi goes a long way.
Right.
And so in Dracula, that's helpful because he has that natural foreignness. But in other films, he was at his best and his talents were best served when you got him in these small effective doses. And then you saw that he could actually act. So he's good here. Lon Chaney is an unlikely protagonist. You have to buy into the transformation when he becomes one of the coolest looking monsters ever, thanks to Jack Pierce. But Jack Pierce didn't create a more terrifying monster pop culture visage than he did in this film.
And Claude Rains, who I love in everything, but he's so great in this. Ralph Bellamy makes an appearance. It's a really standout cast, top to bottom.
Claude Rains classes up everything he's in. I feel like he's that guy who was that player on the Pistons in the 80s, the microwave, Vinny.
Do you remember that? I do, yes.
He'd come in off the bench and he'd just start draining threes and like fix everything. Claude Rains is the microwave for your movie. When things get a little slow, pop in Claude Rains, and he's classy. He's everything that you want. And these films, these Universal films, they occupy this space where we don't really know where they're set. We don't think of it as New York. We're in Europe somewhere, but where in Europe? Like, we have no idea. It's in the magical Universal horror film realm. You have the sensation that if you drove down the road and banged a right turn and went another 3 miles, you'd come to Dracula's castle. And then further along is the watchtower where Colin Clive is piecing together bodies in Frankenstein. I always like that idea of, hey, it's Monster Town, and we could have these films running into each other. And I guess that's what we get later on when they become like really campy with House of Dracula, House of Frankenstein. But at this point, we're still making high-quality films that hold up well today.
And what makes the best of them work is that humanity in the characters. And you feel for Larry Talbot and everything he's going through.
You do at this juncture. Later on, you're like, oh, what are you talking to, you whiny bitch? Yeah, you want to be dead. Who doesn't? But here, there's an element of pathos, because he's had this bad deal sprung on him through no fault of his own, save that he enjoys the carnival or the fair, the gypsy entertainment passing through a little bit too much. And you know how it is, you stay out late, you get bit by the werewolf or the wolf, and then you're going to be smitten and all that stuff. So you do feel for him, and you don't really feel for, well, I don't know. You feel certainly for Karloff when he's the monster in Frankenstein. You don't feel for Lugosi when he's Dracula.
No.
But that pathos on both sides, where this is the one film where we feel bad for everyone in it, really. You don't think, like, even the bad guy isn't a bad guy.
Colin Fleming with us here on Downtown. Let's talk a little music and a phenomenal live set from the Grateful Dead to Columbus, Ohio, 1971, and an absolutely epic version of Dark Star to get things started in an amazing way.
I'm going to try to write a piece about this tomorrow, actually, and it's a set, so it's not the full concert, and it came out in that Dick's Pick series. It was number 2. So this was, I believe it was the last album released when the Grateful Dead, when Jerry Garcia was still alive, existed as a performing unit. And it's perfect for people as an introduction to their music. You get this one set. It's 6 songs. It starts, like you said, with Dark Star. There is no pause in the music. It really is brilliant how interwoven it is, how these guys think telepathically with each other. And what I liken it to is the Who's Live at Leeds. Same idea. 6 songs, compact. And the Who, at the time of Leeds, February 14th, 1970, we're doing all of these long shows where you got Tommy. First, you had a bunch of songs, and you get a lot of Tommy, and then you get Shaken All Over and My Generation, Magic Bus. But Live at Leeds distilled that to 6 songs. So this is also a distillation. Now, that begs the question, do you want the full show, or what works better as an album? And I like both. I like the full Live at Leeds, the 6, and the 6 song version. But with this Dead set, it just works perfect as a single document to experience in a compact session. And that they never break, they never stop. The way they speed from work to work, I just think this is perfect. I listen to this and I hear America's greatest improvisers, America's greatest players on their respective instruments within the teamwork context, and America's greatest dance band. I love the vibe. It's a Halloween boogie down kind of night, but we're also traveling through all these different realms and galaxies and emotional vistas the same way that we are in the Universal horror films, if you get into that kind of frame of mind. So it's just awesome.
The transition into going down the road feeling bad is so good. And I think it really shows off the musicianship of Jerry Garcia. He is so strong throughout this.
The transition for that all the time when they did it, most of the time, and certainly here, because there's this musical pun that happens. You almost see the song coming, not because you know it's in the set list. You don't know. You have no idea. But it sort of insinuates itself coming around the actual bend. And by bend, I mean the next song. So it registers in your subconscious as this song before you know that it's this song. It's a really pleasing feeling as a listener to have that. It's, you know, on certain like Beatles albums, you hear one song and the ear wants to hear what you end up do hearing. Prefigures it, and then it delivers on what your ear wants. That's the same way with this song. And this song is so, it's sad in a way, but it's so uplifting in another way, because it's all about someone going down the road because bad things have happened. But there's this implication of coming back up the road and squaring things and getting things the way they ought to be and as the singer deserves. I delight in it so much. I just think they're the best. I can't say enough things about how amazing the Grateful Dead are to me, and this recording epitomizes that.
It's fantastic. Finally, let's wrap it up with a wonderful bit of poetry by Mary Howitt.
Yeah, and this is something that was from 1829, and it's a cautionary tale. It's a little Vanity Smurfy where... Spider, it was a famous line for a long time if you were in school. This is before my time. "Will you walk into my parlor?" said a spider to a fly. And you Rolling Stones fans might recognize that because it was all co-opted into a 1965 song that was pretty cheeky called "The Spider and the Fly." And so the spider tries to entice the fly all of these different ways. "I have cake. I have a comfy bed. Come lay down. It'll be restful. You'll like how it goes." And the fly is too smart, so the fly thinks, for the spider and keeps rebuffing the arachnid. It just keeps going on and on and on until the crafty spider takes a different tack. And this is the lesson we're all meant to learn. When someone kisses your ass, they're probably just kissing your ass because they're up to no good and they want stuff from you. And that's going to be the downfall. Certainly, the demise of the fly who goes into the parlor, as it were, and never comes out again.
Be the spider, not the fly. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying. He dragged her up his winding stair into his dismal den within his little parlor, but she ne'er came out again. And now, dear little children who made this story read, to idle, silly, flattering words, I pray you ne'er give heed. Unto an evil counselor, close heart and ear and eye, and take a lesson from this tale of the spider and the fly. Bang on.
I love it. So what will you listen to or watch to get yourself in the proper Halloween mood?
Kimball, I just work and weep and run stairs. But for the sake of our radio exchange, where I have to go into a character and pretend to have a life and a happiness that I don't, I would probably cue up that new release, finally, the cleaned-up soundtrack of It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, and I would watch Universal Horror, because people do it wrong. You can't watch Friday the 13th or Slumber Party Massacre or the Dahmer thing, and you shouldn't be into the Dahmer thing. It's not healthy on the Netflix. You have to go with the classic ghosts and goblins and Dracula and Frankenstein's monster. And you can get it wrong and call him Frankenstein for this one day of the year. That's going to be my go-to and probably an apple is a treat for my cholesterol.
Next week, we'll talk jazz, Bud Powell, Billie Holiday, Freddie Hubbard, and more next Tuesday with Colin.
Happy Halloween, my friend.
Thank you. We'll see you next week. Colin Fleming, every Tuesday here on Downtown.